This is episode 5 of Outlander Cast with Mary and Blake.
People disappear all the time. Most are found. Eventually. Disappearances, after all, have explanations. Usually.
Outlander Cast with Mary and Blake. It's a podcast dedicated to the show Outlander on Stars. Everyone, I am your host, Mary Larson.
My name is Blake, and I never want to play field hockey with a bunch of angry Scots.
No, I mean, I played field hockey in high school.
I bet you wasn't like that.
I don't know. We wore mouth guards, and we wore shin pads, and people had shin splints all the time, but that was not like field hockey that I played.
So you didn't have Dougal, you know, whacking you in the face with his stick?
No, and Jamie throwing someone over the back? No.
Dude, he was taking a pound, and I got to give him credit. He took a good pound from Dougal.
He must have a lot of valerian root or Tylenol or whiskey. Because that hurts. If that were me, I would be like limping to the sideline being like, I need an ice pack.
If that were me, I'd be like, yo, all right, I give in. I suck. Fine, no problem. I'm not going to play this game anymore.
Yeah, man. That was terrible.
Wow.
Talking about sucking, we need to clarify on some things from last week's episode.
Mm-hmm.
We got some great tweets from some people to help us out.
Lynn Mittman tweets into us. She says, by the way, please don't call the English Brits, because that's really all of the Scots. English, Welsh, Irish. It's English versus Scots.
Thank you so much, Lynn, for this clarification. We are damn Yankees.
I know. We just don't know any better.
No, and we should. And this was like an awesome, awesome clarification. So we will be very careful when we refer to people. The Redcoats are those English. They will not be Brits anymore.
It will
Thank
be
you
just
so
be
much.
English. You're 100% right.
And then Marie Eastwood also tweeted in that it was Murtaugh that spoke to Claire at the table about Leary, not Rupert. Let me tell you, these bearded guys in kilts with the same bloody haircut, the same beards, the same kilt, it's killing me.
I got to say, they're all like interchangeable to me. One could be one and the other could be other. You know, so like it's interchangeable Scotsman 1, interchangeable Scotsman 2. You know, that's what it feels
Except
like to me.
Except their personalities are so incredibly different.
I agree. And I don't mean to disrespect the characters or the actors or anything. I'm joking about it. But they all have their own personalities, and it's fantastic acting. And I'm going to eventually get all the names. I promise I will.
Yeah, I think by next episode, we're starting to get to know them very well. Speaking about getting to know us very well, Jen from Outlander Musings wanted to let us know that she really enjoys the podcast and the episode. She loves all the series point of view on the show and loves Blake because she feels like Blake and her dear husband are long lost bros with the hashtag boob count. Blake, you have created some hashtags.
I've created a hashtag about boob counts. And hey, the boob count for this episode was 0.
Mm-hmm.
So we are still stuck on like 8 to 10 boobs so far
for this
series.
Wow, yeah. Well, I hope that for any of you listeners out there who are having a difficult time getting a significant other to watch the show, you know, maybe you can tell them. You can say, listen, yes, it's fantasy and it's romance, but there's also a boob count.
There's
going
a boob
on.
Count by some random dude on
yes.
some Outlander podcast.
From Rhode Island.
And he's just way too crazy about this. Hey, I also want to say that Mary has also created a hashtag. Hashtag Sassenach wasted. That literally exists. Go up there and research it. It's there, I promise.
Yes.
It's fantastic.
Mandy Taylor also tweeted,
I'm a little afraid Blake is going to miss seeing the true depth of Jamie's character because he's annoyed by fan adoration. Mandy, you're 100% right. I'm going to own up to my first jealousy of Jamie, and two, I'm a little bit of a contrarian. I hate when people just fawn all over somebody just because they like them, and oh my God, it's Jamie, and I can't do it. And that's kind of why I'm Team Frank, and I'm kind of sick of Jamie. Although I will say this episode, The Gathering, there was a scene that I really liked Jamie, and it almost got me a little emotional as he was talking. And I'm starting to turn the corner on Jamie.
All right. I'm glad. And I'm glad that all of the Jamie loves are sticking up for him and telling Blake what's up.
No, thank you. And thank you. Thank you for calling me out on that, Mandy, because honestly, you're 100% right. It's like a fabrication almost. My hate of Jamie. Well, not hate, but my dislike of Jamie. But I'll give you the professional tease. We'll get to why I like Jamie.
All right.
Just in a little bit.
Let's talk about this week's title, The Gathering. Once again, very difficult to understand what this is about.
Ron Moore is a little direct with his titles. I'm not going to lie. It seems to be...
It's not even him. It's Diana and him, you know? They're simple with their titles. They're very direct. You don't have to worry. There's not a lot of thought. So, of course, The Gathering is all about the McKenzie clan coming in to visit Colin McKenzie.
Given their oaths.
And pretty much say, I've got your back, bro.
Yeah, no matter what, we don't want any war with any clans, but if there is a war with clans, we are going to be pledging our fealty to you. And fealty obviously being, you know, the allegiance and their pride and everything behind that allegiance. That's fealty.
Before this episode even started, we got to have a little bit of the recap, you know, what you would have missed on Outlander if you just decided to join in for episode 4. Mm-hmm. And there was this shot that I don't know if it existed before. Of course, we had Claire's voiceover explaining quickly, I was on my honeymoon, then I traveled through time. What's going to happen to me? But there was this shot of Claire at the stones with Frank walking up to her, and she was still wearing her white shift, and it was all clean. And I don't remember that happening.
No, it definitely didn't happen. Although, was that her hoping for his response? Like if when she was to come back from the stones, didn't that happen last episode? Like that was her like positing that's what would happen when she returned?
Yeah, but I don't remember that shot. So it was interesting to find that.
I could have sworn that was in episode 3.
In like the flashback or what she would have thought was happening.
Yes.
Okay. So I thought it was an interesting shot. Nonetheless, we start off with this beautiful opening sequence. I've been talking a lot about the opening sequence on both Instagram and Twitter. We're going to have some conversations about this probably later on this week about favorite parts of this opening sequence with the names and the title cards, just because it's gorgeous. I love it. I can't get enough. I find that I love each and every shot. But the reason I'm talking about the title sequence so much is because so many of these shots came up in this week's episode.
Yes.
You finally got to see the banging on the shield. And I wondered, is this their call to war? No, that's what the guys do to scare the pigs. And you saw Claire running in the woods. And all this time I've been wondering, who is she running from? She was running from the kids. And then we have, what did we decide to call the episode title card?
Yes.
It says The Gathering, and it had the special pin, which we'll get into more. But I like how they're doing this. They're having a really beautiful shot with the episode title card each time.
It's almost alluding to what is going to happen in the episode that you're about to see. They had that last week. I finally actually made note of it today for this episode. I actually noticed that there is a difference for each episode. It sparked my interest last week. Came together this week. And I really liked what they're doing with that and teasing you about what's to happen. When you finally see the pin in the episode, you're like, oh, that's from the title card. Like, holy crap, that actually makes sense now. Because you're seeing it at the time and you're like, what does it say? What does it mean? I don't get it. It reminds me of Game of Thrones a little bit. And I know a lot of people have been comparing this week's episode to Game of Thrones in many ways. But I like seeing what the title card has to show. It almost gives you a reason to not skip it anymore. It almost gives you, I mean, besides the fact that it's a beautiful
opening,
and it gives you another reason to say, okay, what is this, what's coming up next? And I think they learned from Game of Thrones in a very serious way. Make the episode title, the title card, part of the show. People will like it. People enjoy it. And I think that's really cool what they're doing.
We open up with Claire being chased by the children through the woods, and we get a good shot of seeing these kind of sentries on their posts with guns. Mm-hmm. You don't see a lot of guys with guns, but they're out there keeping their eye on Castle Leok, and Claire's pretty much playing tag with these kids. She's pretending to be a boar and runs into her babysitters, for the lack of a better word, who are giving her a tough time because they're too busy watching her run amok with the kids, and they want to be with the party. And they try to hide it at first. They're like, excuse me. Oh, first she gets a crotch shot.
There's just one thing I'd be happy to never see in my life, and that would be Angus's man parts.
Yeah.
I just, no thanks.
All set.
All set, dude. Can you imagine like the forest that might be there? Oh, God.
Something catch your eye.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, it was more than a little something, bro. I'd also like to talk about this too. It's another great fake out by Ron Moore with this opening scene with Claire running through, because in the previous episode, you know that she's vowed to leave Castle Leok and she's going to get back to Frank, and you see her sitting there running in the woods. It's the heavy breathing. It's the swishing through the woods. And you're like, oh my God, are they going to do this?
Well, you've seen this shot now all this time. You've always been wondering, where is Claire running from? Where is she running to? And we're finally seeing it.
And there it is. And it builds up on top of the fake out that they had last episode with Mrs. Fitz and all that other stuff. And it made you believe, holy crap, this is really going to happen now. And then it was a nice little transition into the fact that she wasn't running. They were building tension because the guy's holding up the guns and he's ready to shoot and you don't know what's happening. And then all of a sudden there are kids, you know, and they're playing a game. But the game is a lot more than just the game. The game is Claire using these little kids to figure out where she's got to go when she wants to leave. I got to give Claire a lot of credit here, because she's using these kids as a veil to go and spread her web.
Ribbons.
Yeah, spread the ribbons, you know, and to test the boundaries of where she can and cannot go. Very smart on Claire's behalf. I got to give her a lot of credit.
And she gets to kind of make her babysitters a little upset in the process, because she's been keeping them from this big party. All these kids are here because the entire Mackenzie clan is in for the gathering. They're all camping, pretty mm-hmm. much. It's like a big, you know, hoedown camping ritual. And her babysitters want to go and play and meet some ladies.
They were like, oh, we're missing all the festivities. Come on. You know, let's go. And she... it's like she's playing with them a little bit. Yeah, oh yeah, no problem. Yeah, we'll go. Like, we'll stop the game. And she's pushing them to just follow her lead. And she's making them do the things that she needs to do in order to facilitate her escape.
Claire is always thinking. Always like one step ahead of everyone. You know, and even when she was walking through the camp and she's realizing, okay, I need to ditch my guards, my babysitters.
Yeah.
How can I do this? Oh, well, I'll hook one of them up with that girl who's making some soup. What the heck kind of soup was she making?
I don't know what she was doing.
Turnip soup?
But how about some just random girl that was looking, just happens to be looking in their direction, and Claire's like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, go over there and just bang her. You know, like that's basically what she was saying.
With a stick game. Right? That girl, by the way, she had such a come hither stare. She had her shawl like halfway off, mm-hmm. Boobies sticking out a little, you know, she had that nice little bustier. Her shoulders were showing. No wonder the boys were fighting over her.
Don't look, but she's taking an interest in you.
Let's play the stick game.
No, you don't copy my Claire voice.
I'm not as good.
Don't
as
you dare copy my Claire voice.
Well, she gets one of them out, right?
Yep.
Rupert ended up winning the stick game, or Angus? I'm trying to remember.
No, Angus won the stick game.
Okay.
And then Rupert was pissed off because he's like, hey, what the heck? Because he took the stick out. He's like, I got it first. Da, da, da. And then Claire's like, no, that's not how it works, man. And he's all pissed off because he's got the stick, the small end.
Yes. Oh. And then she's stuck with him and she needs to figure out how to ditch her last man.
I also want to say before we move on real quick, I liked how they had this little exposition about the kid and he's pointing out in Claire's hair how her ribbons have gone missing.
Yes.
And then they eventually show the ribbons, you know, being placed throughout the woods, showing her route of escape, should she, you know, escape later on in the day or in the next day or whatever. I have a couple of problems with this, though. Number one, you are literally showing the route of your escape if somebody wants to find you. You're leaving not only breadcrumbs for you, but for them as well. And you know it's going to be dark out, and she ain't going to have time to take those little ribbons off the trees. Because if somebody catches wind that she's gone, she doesn't have time to waste. Number two, I know I've said I am a total supporter now of the voiceovers. I really am. I honest to God, I swear to God, I am. However, I wish the showrunners, Ron Moore, and the writers would trust their audience a little bit more than what they are.
What do you mean?
They have her doing the voiceover about, oh, well, I'm going to leave the ribbons, and it's going to show my way. It's breadcrumbs. I wish they had just alluded to what she was referring to. She talked about, oh, seeing the outskirts of the camp and where she could go. And she's saying, oh, I'm checking out where these sentries are. It's clear the way they shot it that Claire is checking out these sentries. Like the way she's looking at them, it keeps panning to these sentries, no problem. And then they also talk about how she leaves the ribbons. And then the kid's saying, oh, your ribbons are missing. And then they pan to the ribbons. But now she's talking about it. If they had just shown the ribbons, if this show was like a little bit smarter, if it allowed its viewers to meet them halfway, to meet the show halfway, to infer all this, it would be better. It would be a better experience, at least for me.
I think I'm okay with that bit of a voiceover. I think they could have like left out maybe one sentence, the breadcrumb bit.
Yeah.
When I saw her looking at the sentries, I got more nervous for her. Like, holy crap, these guys have guns. How the heck am I going to get out of here? Or they're very serious. I wasn't thinking Claire's still planning her escape past these sentries. I liked seeing the ribbons. And I liked that she said this game was, you know, pretty much a ploy so that she could go out there and learn the route. So I liked that. I agree with you. It was a little too much. I especially didn't care for the voiceover at the end of this episode, which just seemed to go on when they were all on the horses and she was like, now I'm going out with everybody. Now I never know when I'll get to the stones.
Well, the other problem I have with that final voiceover too is she ended the last episode saying, I'm going to escape Castle Leoc. I'm going to do whatever I can to return to Craig the Dune. And she ends this episode again with the same exact line almost.
Well, that's all she's thinking about.
I agree. I agree. But it isn't showing a lot of growth on her behalf. It's just her sticking with, I'm leaving, I'm leaving, I'm leaving.
She's determined.
She's determined. And I get that. But I just wish that the show would allow its viewers to meet them halfway. I wish, and maybe it's just because it's still establishing itself. And maybe because you're still getting to know the characters. And I get all that. I just wish it was just a little bit smarter.
The only thing that I can say for these voiceovers to keep reminding you, I think it's so easy to get caught up in 1743. It's easy to get caught up in Dreamy Jamie. Mm-hmm. And you need to remember that Claire is not from 1743. She is just trying to get home. And that's why in this episode, I loved how frequently music from the 40s came in. And this actually started in the next scene where Claire is going to check out the horse. She goes and sees old Alec, the guy that's working on the horse. And she says, I'm going to need a horse of my own because I'm going on the hunt. But all you can hear is 1940s jazz music again.
Oh, it's great.
And it's like whenever, in my opinion, this happens whenever Claire is really thinking about escaping because she is so excited in her mind that she has got this plan. And whenever she's planning out this plan, the 1940s music comes back on when she's in her zone. And this is the first time that it happens.
Well, no, this happened last episode,
too. In this episode, I mean.
Oh, okay. In this episode, okay, I'm sorry. Correct. Yeah. No, it was definitely more noticeable in this episode than last. It seemed almost like just a passing musical choice, but this one, it seemed very pointed.
Because this episode was all gearing up for Claire's escape.
Yeah, and I also like what Alec had to say to her, which was, hey, if you don't watch this horse, you don't keep an eye on it, it's going to run back home.
He also told her to leave Jamie alone.
Yes, and at the time, you're sitting there saying, well, dude, why are you being like that with Claire? You know, Claire clearly has only had Jamie's, you know, best interests at heart. Mm-hmm. What are we doing here? Why are you being like that? And it makes you wonder, made you wonder if, like, Jamie had a problem with Claire all of a sudden, or if Alec is trying to prevent them two from getting together because maybe she's screwing with his work abilities, his work ethic, who knows? But eventually you get to find out that Jamie's in line for something that's pretty freaking big.
He could be.
Yes.
He could be.
He could be.
Jamie is a very important person. He has some good lineage.
Yes.
Is that the right word?
Lineage.
Lineage.
Yeah, there you go. Lineage.
I made that word up. Ew, the other thing, I didn't like that her horse's name was Brimstone.
Oh, yeah. And she's like, oh, yeah, that seems very, like, dire. That seems very dire.
No, thanks.
But, yeah, eventually you find out that Jamie is going to be in line to be the next Laird of Castle Leo.
Well, let's clarify that. Let's just jump ahead straight to that. So okay. He is not necessarily going to be in line. Here's a scoop. Jamie's mom was the sister of Colum and Dougal.
Yes.
So Jamie is like half Mackenzie.
Yes.
But his father comes from a different family, mm-hmm. and that's who Jamie associates with. Jamie does not want to really be part of the Mackenzie clan. The only reason he's there is because there is a price on his head and is the safest place for him to be right now. Because you can tell, like, he gets beaten up pretty much by Dougal's hand. I mean, he likes the guys there, but really they're not on his side. It's definitely awkward for him. It's not, like, his happy place.
Yeah, they got him in the stables, you know. Like, he's not even in the castle.
Well, he's there because he's hiding.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's awkward for him because he's hiding. He's in the stables.
Oh, you mean in the stables working?
Yeah, yeah. And, like, okay. He's clearly not, like, a real accepted member of what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, based upon his lineage, there we go, saying in the right to
word. That a girl.
He being the nephew and his age, basically, he could have the power to take over the position of Laird.
Yeah, as long as the rest of the
clansmen wanted him.
As long as the rest of the clansmen voted him in.
Yeah.
You know, and whether or not, and I know it's kind of counterintuitive to what we were just saying, it could very well happen that they may vote him in because he may have the best claim to what's going on there in terms of him being the next Laird.
So you took it as Alec basically saying, please leave him alone. He's pretty much like Prince George.
Yeah,
and like, we just can't have you messing with him, Sassanach.
Well, yeah, it's that. But also, Alec also knows the problem that Jamie is facing. As we all know, the problem, that, well, not at the time, but eventually you find out that the rest of Castle Leoch knows the problem that Jamie's facing.
I also took it as Alec being a little racist.
Well, yeah, I could say that too.
That was more my issue. But
because
saw him,
she's a Sassanach. And
yeah.
Hey, get the hell out of here, you chick. You know,
I want him to stick with our own people, get a girl of our own people. It would be much better for him if he, you know, shacked up with a Mackenzie girl.
Yeah, because people still consider her an English spy.
Yeah, that's what Jamie just said last episode.
Yeah, even though she is a miracle worker now, and everybody knows that, I get it, and this is obviously a few weeks later, but people are still a little weary of this woman, and I don't blame them. But Alec is very aware of the problem that Jamie faces, in that either he pledges his fealty to Colum, which means he's next in line, or could be next in line as Laird, which pisses Dougal off and gets him killed.
Yeah.
Or he doesn't do the pledge, which pisses Dougal off, and Dougal kills him.
Not so, even Dougal, like the people.
Yeah,
like,
the people, but whatever, you know, like, either way, this kid's going to die.
Alec just has Jamie's back. He thinks he does. Yeah, he thinks he's being a good,
exactly.
good
so
boyfriend.
The way out of it is Jamie's going to sit there and say, well, no, I'm not going to do anything. I'm going to hide out until after this gathering, and Alec knows that. So I don't want you bringing them out. I don't want you getting around them, because ultimately you're going to get in trouble like you always have, and Jamie's going to have to come and save you.
Goodness.
And which, of course, is what happens.
Yes. Well, let's get to that part later, because okay, that's a really good part. This all is right, more about Claire trying to leave.
Yes.
Now she's gathering all of her goods. Hopefully she got some more cheese, because her cheese went away.
No, you saw the cheese. You saw the cheese amongst the apples.
Yes,
and everything.
Yes, good, because she was like, damn, I want that cheese. Like, I'm not going to be in 1743 for hopefully much longer, but this cheese is good. So she's in her stores, you know, gathering some stuff, and Gaelis comes to visit.
Oh, and I loved how the music, it was coming to a head. You got some words going, you have things. It was playing loud.
The 1940s
music. The 1940s music, and then all of a sudden Gaelis shows up, and boom. Music stops.
Yep.
And it was jarring.
Yeah. You're
almost in Claire's head as it's happening. You're getting lulled to sleep by this great music. And being in that 1940s, she's still very much a 20th century woman. She considers herself a 20th century woman in the 18th century.
She does not consider herself pregnant, I'll tell you that.
No, hell no.
How incredibly rude. Okay, I've written a blog post. I have a blog, just so you guys know.
TellMomTinyBaby.com.
TellMomTinyBaby. And I wrote a whole
shameless
post
plug
about how you shouldn't be asking people if they're pregnant.
Oh, God.
Just rude. Girl code, okay? And you just don't do that. And why does she say she's eating for two? Like, just don't do that. Don't be rude.
And this is why Gaelis... She's bad news, dude. She's bad news. I don't trust her as far as I could throw Dougal. I just something about her I don't like. And I'm going to save my outlandish theory. Remember how last podcast I said I had an outlandish theory about Gaelis?
Okay, we'll get back to that.
I let it simmer. I let it marinate. And I finally come to the conclusion what I got. And I'm going to get to that later on in the episode.
So they have this pretty long dialogue. Is your husband dead? Well, he's not alive. Well, is he dead? In between, we have some flashbacks of Frank. Poor Claire. Her heart, man.
Oh, and I love the flashbacks of Frank. Because, again, it's setting that mood that she's still very much a 20th century woman. And she's got this guy that she's going back to whom she made a promise that she was going to come back.
Eventually, Claire's like, God, this girl's getting after me. Yes, he's dead. Okay, he's dead. So she says it. And then Gaelis decides, while I'm at it, while I'm being a very kind and classy woman, I'm just going to throw it out there that maybe you're barren. Because that's a proper thing to say.
Oh, my God.
Gosh, it's like strike three.
I literally could not believe she actually said this to Claire. And that's why the Gaelis is bad news. Because she's saying anything to get, I think, under Claire's skin. Just to elicit a response, maybe, to get what she needs out of her. Now, I don't know what it is yet, but she's trying so hard.
And then she tries to give Claire a bit of advice. It's not too out there, but she says, you know, oh, I wasn't really from here, and I married a rich man, and now I'm free to do whatever I want. You know, sometimes you're on a path that you never expected, but I'm making the most of my path. And I thought she was just basically telling Claire, like, hey, why don't you find a rich old man, too, who farts a lot? Because look at me. I can go wherever I want. I get red shoes.
And she acknowledges that very much, by the way. I'm going to refrain from saying this, because this gets into my outlandish theory of the week.
She does give her a little nod, though, saying the Highlands are no place for a woman to be alone. So I think she knows. Like, she's like, okay, you're not pregnant. And you're going on a hunt. Well, just so you know, it's not a good place for a woman to be alone. Like, I think she might have a little inkling that Claire's trying to escape.
Gaelis is a very smart woman. I'm going to say that. She knows what she's talking about.
Gathering is going on. Claire is, like, just miffed, for the lack of a better word, because Gaelis just sucks. And Mrs. Fitz tells Claire that she is not dressed appropriately for the gathering. As if that is the top of Claire's priority right now.
I know. Because she plans on taking a hike.
Yes.
She thinks, well, since the gathering's happening, this is my best opportunity to get out of here.
Everyone's going to be hanging out, drinking, busy.
Now, again, we keep having this theme of Claire being just a little too smart for herself. Just a little too smart. She did it for the past few episodes. Here she is again doing it. She's not thinking clearly. She's only focusing on getting back to Frank. Why am I saying this? Because eventually, Jamie tells her, look, Colm's got 1,000 people here, whatever it was. He's got extra people in the woods. What are you thinking that you're going to escape with all these people here? All of our clan is here. People, if somebody wants to attack us, this is the perfect opportunity.
Like, you're not as smart as you think you are, Claire.
Like, yeah, like, calm down, Claire. You got to think this through. Use your brain. Take your time. And clearly she did use her brain. I mean, she sat there and she counted out the paces that it took to get to the stables and how many stalls down the horse was.
She prepared quite well, in my opinion. For what she knew, she prepared very well.
It was like Ocean's 11. Like, she knew exactly where everything was,
yes,
when it was. All I wanted was George Clooney to show up and just, you know, say, hey, where's the gold?
All the gold's gone. Oh, my goodness. So Claire's just, you know, going about the castle, the gathering's happening. I loved seeing all these shots of all these people hanging out, just extras that we've never seen before, two of which were very important. We got to see the author of the series, Diana Gabaldon, and also Ron Moore.
Wow.
They were dressed up, looking in their finest from this era, and got to be clans people.
And how about Diana Gabaldon having some good lines?
Oh my gosh.
Just giving sass to Mrs. Fitz. By the way, as we already learned, you don't give sass to Mrs. Fitz because Mrs. Fitz gives it back to you.
But Diana did. And she even shushed Claire.
Oh, I know, right? Wasn't that great?
That was great.
But I love the line that Mrs. Fitz had back to Diana Gabaldon, which was, you know, Diana Gabaldon said something along the lines of like, oh, you had this place all spick and span, yada, yada, it looks great. Mrs. Fitz says something like, oh, yeah, well, you know, that dress that you're wearing, it looked great at the last gathering that we had. And it's kind of like, ooh, burn.
Oh, my God. I didn't even catch that just because I was so excited to see Diana. I didn't know that they said that.
Girlfriend, that's why you got me.
Oh, and that's like a really mean girl thing to say.
Oh, you know, here it is. It says, oh, that lovely dress again. You wore it so well to the last gathering.
Oh my gosh.
Which also has some undertones too, because the last time you had the gathering, which was like a long time ago, mm-hmm, which means that same dress was like in fashion then, so it can't be in fashion now, you know what I mean?
Yes, however, if anyone was ever like, wow, Mary, it was nice when you wore that dress at your prom, I'd be like, damn straight, I can still fit into my dress. I would have taken it as a compliment.
But
ooh.
Burn. Burned by Mrs. Fitz.
Okay, the bagpipes that played. There was such great music in this episode between mm-hmm the 1940s, and then we had all of this different bagpipe playing to kind of just show you the different things that were going on in the hall. Colm comes in. His hair's all brushed. He has it nicely
no
tied
beard.
Back. No, he was. I remember you saying, is that Colm? I mean, the first thing you see are his feet, so there's no way that you can't know, but he looks so fine.
He looks different. Like,
He's cleaned up.
A totally different person. I got to say, the actor, I think his name's Gary Lewis. This guy owned this scene. He owned the whole thing with the walk down the aisle. People were admiring him. And then the speech, it was all in Gaelic, so you couldn't understand exactly what he was saying. You made out Castle Leok every once in a while. But that speech, you can see why these people follow him.
Yes.
He owned that whole speech. It brought out that kind of pride that you'd sit there and say, yeah, I'm from Castle Leok, or this is my castle. Mm-hmm. I own this place. This is going to be my place going forward.
It made me feel like, because of course I didn't understand anything. It was in Gaelic, but it made me feel like when you're watching the Olympic opening ceremonies and you see your team come out.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, look at them.
How about those hideous freaking USA uniforms,
right?
This year?
But hey, but that's how you feel. You're like, oh, I'm so proud of my people. I feel so good and connected. And you had Murtaugh, you know, able to tell Claire bit by bit about what Colm was saying. But you almost didn't need it, because you're right. It was just, you could just feel the enthusiasm.
Yeah, because it didn't matter. I mean, I think it's going to lend itself to a little bit of foreshadowing of what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. I think that's why they made such a point to have Murtaugh tell Claire.
Well, Diana's character did not like that, so she shushed. She shushed him.
She's
a
like,
little
stop
bit.
Stop talking.
And they had to each male had to pledge his oath to Colm. And they had this great little speech, and the first person to do it was his brother Dougal.
Mm-hmm. Dougal. This is, all right, I'm getting into my second outlandish theory of the week. I'm going to have two today.
Okay.
So I'm going to kind of refrain from commenting on this, but Dougal is sitting there making this pledge. Now they're making the pledge so that from Dougal so that you can see that his brother loves his other that his brother loves his brother, and he's pledging his allegiance. Great, but I think there's a little bit more that's happening here.
I agree. It was a little awkward.
It was a little bit. And they wanted you to understand the pledge. They wanted you to listen to it, to give it its weight, its due weight.
Well, and also to see and to understand that every single guy does the same pledge. He kneels down, takes out his dagger, says these words, and drinks some wine. And it's important to know that because you saw how many guys were in that hall. They all said the same thing, except when Jamie came in. And yes. Jamie stood up. He kneeled down for a little bit, but then he was up.
Well, you could see Jamie looking at Dougal and then looking at Gollum and being like, okay, what the hell am I going to do right now?
Improv, man. Improv.
That was great. It was absolutely awesome. And this is kind of when I'm starting to turn around.
All right, you're starting to feel Jamie. I like it. So after Dougal drinks the wine and they do their thing, Claire sees this as a good opportunity. She's like, oh, there's probably, what, 300 guys here? Mm-hmm. It's going to be a long line of people saying the same thing, drinking a lot of wine. Now's a good time for me to go. So she heads on down to the surgery and gets interrupted by leg hair, otherwise known as Leary.
Leary.
And she asks for a love potion. Now, I don't know how I feel about this.
Why not?
What has Claire done to ever make anyone think that she could make a potion like this? Like, Claire is very logical, you know, like everything that she does. All right, it's a broken bone. Sure, we're going to fix it. And you have a bruise. We're going to do this. Or you have a displaced shoulder. It's all very concrete.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's interesting that Leary comes up to her and asks for pretty much a love potion.
Yeah, I think that speaks to Leary's character. Remember how they said, oh, she's always going to be a lass. She's never going to be a grown-up. She's not going to be Michelle Obama.
Yes.
That is what is happening with Leary. And I also want to say this, too. It seems like a great contradiction between Leary and Claire. Claire wanted the intimacy that Leary was sharing with Jamie. But Leary knows that Jamie is in love with Claire. And she wants the love that...
I don't know if she knows that he's in love with Claire. I just think she knows...
Oh, come
Jamie
on
Jamie likes to make out with me, but I'm missing something.
Yeah, but you saw how uncomfortable Leary was in that last episode. Not this one, but the previous one.
Yeah, but she made out with him afterwards. And Claire even said that. She's like, oh, you're looking towards Mr. McTavish? It looks like you're doing just fine.
Yeah, but you and I both know when Jamie was sitting there saying, oh, well, yeah, I don't even remember you. But he was clearly speaking with Claire in a way that was a little bit more overt than he was with Leary. There's just no way around it.
Yeah.
So I think that she sees that kind of feeling that she knows she's not getting from Jamie. And she wants that. And it's so great to see how Jamie and Leary, I'm sorry, how Claire and Leary want the same thing, but they're not getting it.
No, but you know what can save the day?
What?
Dried horse dung. And what did she say? Like, step around it? I don't even know.
She said, put it on the doorstep, get in this door, click your heels three times, and
yes.
Say, there's no place like love.
There's no place like love.
What a great callback to something that she would have seen because Wizard of Oz came out in the 30s.
Oh, I love it. Before this even happened, I completely forgot. Claire got a... Got some other people a little Sassenach wasted.
Oh, there was some serious Sassenach wasted going on.
Port wine, man.
Poor Murtaugh. Seriously.
That's not Murtaugh.
It wasn't Murtaugh?
No.
I thought it was Murtaugh.
No, Murtaugh is the guy that's more like quiet and serious. He was the one that was talking to her upstairs and was telling her bit by bit what was going on.
Okay. Oh, so was it Angus? Because it definitely wasn't Rupert.
I think this was Angus.
Okay, all right. So it's Angus. Interchangeable Scotsman number two.
No, I'm pretty sure it was Angus because Murtaugh wouldn't have fallen for that. And then...
Because Murtaugh's all business.
He is.
Right?
Yeah, he's just very mature. You know, he's like ever-watchful Mitch from Meerkat Manor. He's just watching out.
Real quick, when Mary and I first started dating, 7 long years ago, by the way, we bonded over Meerkat Manor. So
we've come a long way. We've moved from meerkats to Outlander. So
to Dirty Scotsman.
Yes.
So we bonded over Meerkat Manor, and we loved it. We watched it like religiously for like 2 years, and we fell in love with this little meerkat, Mitch. And Mitch was the meerkat that watched over the whole like community of meerkats. It was so cute.
It was.
And I think adorable. that's what Murtaugh is. He's Mitch.
Yeah. So Claire hands off this port wine, which she's obviously put in what with the valerian root.
Yes.
That she was talking about how it can put someone to sleep quite easily.
And thank you, Galus, for that positive information that
how
it
to
put
boil it. Yeah.
How to boil it. Yep. Thank you to Galus for that.
Claire probably took that information and she's like, yeah, take that wine, go share it with your friends.
Which was clear to us now that she had this planned the entire time. She knew exactly what was going to happen. That these people, one of these people were going to follow her. She's like, oh, once you've seen them all. Let's go. Come on. We're going to get out of here. And then she's like, okay, yeah, you know what? I'll stay for a little bit. Why don't you have a drink? And Angus just downs half of it. And she's like, yeah, it's a sedative. He goes, what is that, Spanish?
Love it. Love it.
I laughed so hard when I saw that.
Oh, my goodness. And he goes off, and you see him throughout, like, the rest of the night, like, tapping people's bums, just laughing all over the place. He had a jolly old time.
That man was having a good time. Mm-hmm. He's like, oh, yeah, it's wicked strong. And yeah, bro, it's strong. You're going to go to bed in a half hour.
Well, everyone was drinking that night because Claire's trying to leave. She has her cheese and apples, and she gets assaulted by some just random Mackenzie Clansman.
This was legitimately scary.
Yes.
It was. And not scary like, oh, poof, horror scary, but like, okay, what is going to happen to Claire? What's going to happen? Is she really going to get raped? And my feeling on this was it was going to be Jamie who saved her. Because by this point, you still hadn't seen Jamie.
Yeah. You didn't know where he was.
You didn't know where he was. And a couple of things. First, this episode worked on a lot of different levels for me. The first level was it was its own story. It progressed the storyline, which was great. Eventually, by the end of the episode, Claire is now out of Castle Leok, which was needed. You needed to get her out of there. Just story-wise, you couldn't keep getting her into these little trysts and little fights among the Castle Leok people. She's got to get out. But secondly, it kept Jamie out of the episode for like a half hour. I think that's what it was. Uh-huh. For like half the episode. You didn't see Jamie at all, which is great too, because you cannot have the Jamie and Claire relationship be the entire basis for this show. You can't do it.
Well, especially not now. Claire is trying to get back to her husband, Frank.
Exactly.
So you need that 1940s music. You need Claire to keep looking back, because we need to remember that this is what is utmost important to her. Yes, there's this cute guy, but to be honest, she's just trying to set up Leary with him right now. Yeah. She has a fondness for Jamie.
And it clearly she does. And clearly she's worried by it. That's why she's setting up Leary with Jamie. But if you made this show solely about the Jamie-Claire relationship, it would progress too fast. You would need to get them in situations where eventually it would just have to be that they hook up. It would have to be that way in order for the story to progress.
And I think some people may be angry at Claire had it moved too quickly.
Sure. It reminds me of Lost a little bit. And if you haven't seen Lost, bear with me. There's a point in season 3 in Lost where they literally have the characters in cages. Like, I'm not kidding. They had characters locked up in cages. Why did they do that? Well, Damon Lindelof comes out and says, we didn't know what to do with them. We cannot progress their storyline anymore without going forward in a way that it's too quick to go forward. So what do? We literally locked them up in cages and made them sit there for 2 or 3 episodes because we didn't know what to do. And that is what it should be happening and is happening here with Ron Moore and the Claire-Jamie relationship. He cannot be in every single scene with Claire. That's a great thing. Another level that this episode worked. We all know that she wants to get back to Frank. That's her main goal. We've already established that not even 2 minutes ago. But we know that since this is a show, it has to tease that idea out. So we knew that she wasn't going to succeed in escaping Castle Leok to get back to Craig Nadun. We know it. The way this episode worked was, it wasn't about her escaping. Oh my God, is she going to do it? It was, how is she going to fail? What's going to get in her way? What will happen that prevents her from getting to Craig Nadun?
Will it be her babysitters? Will it be these guys attacking her in the
Dougal?
Hall?
Yeah. Yep. You see these guys and you're like, oh my God, maybe this is what's going to prevent her from getting here. And that was the danger. It wasn't her escaping. The danger is the roadblocks that she's going to get into. Mm-hmm. And this served as a perfect roadblock because you literally didn't know what was going to happen.
No. And then Dougal, out of all people, Dougal is the one that comes to her rescue.
Exactly. And you sit there and you're like, oh my God, yeah, this is great. Dougal's a nice guy. And he kind of is because he gets them out of there. But the problem is that he's rip-roaring drunk. He is Sassenach wasted.
And he's really bad for a moment.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Like, very poor judgment. And she obviously doesn't want his advances. And he kind of like nuzzles on her and inappropriately touches her.
And it looks like he's trying to get up her skirt a little bit.
Yes.
And like he's trying to get some business done here.
Yes.
And
disgusting.
And she
terrible.
Gives him a whack. She gives him a whack. And you know what? Good. Dougal, because there's something funny about him too. And it's not just because of this scene. He's a good man. I think he's got his ways. But there's something a little off about him.
He noticed that something was off with Claire. He saw her little bag of cheese.
Oh, yeah. And before he sees the bag of cheese, he says, get you gone last before you pay a greater price. Which, again, it's that subtle Dougal-like threat. Like some bad news is going to happen real soon.
Like almost saying, all right, I'm not going to sexually abuse you.
Yep.
So go away. Are you trying to pretend you're being a nice guy right now?
Yeah. Well, is that just like 1743, like Scottish? Like
no, it, I thought it was very inappropriate and I was very turned off by this of Dougal.
It
upset me greatly.
Mm-hmm, I agree.
Claire, oh God, you know, girl is on a mission.
She
bangs him over the head and is like, I am not going to let Dougal stop me.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes out and she has her eyes on the sentries and she's covered. She looked like a hobbit. You know how they all have those robes and they like hide themselves? She, with the big heads, the big
It actually it reminded me of Obi-Wan Kenobi and
yes.
A New Hope. You know when he has the hood on and he's running through the Death Star and he's like fixing all like the stuff and he's trying to get the shield down. That's what it reminded me of a little bit.
Nice. She runs off to the stables thinking like, right, I made it here 15 paces and I know where the horse is. He's on the fourth stall.
And the sentry looks to the south normally and Brimstone's on the right and yada da 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 da. And then we see our boy, Jamie. Everyone's love. Jamie, Jamie, Jamie. I love Jamie.
Well, it was a really weird thing. Like, he pretty much was like, where are you going? And I was really taken aback that Claire was so open with him. Like, aw, shucks, Jamie, you're here? I was trying to escape. I've been planning this forever, and now you've ruined it. Because a little part of me was just like, girlfriend, you just knocked Dougal out because you want to escape so bad. And now just because you tripped over Jamie, you're going to give up and say like, hey, let me tell you my whole plan. I was trying to leave and luckily Jamie takes it well.
Yeah. You know, he asks, you know, was he inappropriate with you? And she's like, oh yeah. Oh yes. Dougal was a little forward with me, you know? And like, and he asks her, well, what was he drunk? And she's like, yeah, very. Very, very drunk. You know, and then I've teased this, and now this is when I'm starting to turn the corner with Jamie.
Why?
Because he says, I hope you left a good mark so he remembers his error in judgment. And he gives a little bit of a laugh, and he says, it's fine, Sassenach. It's fine. It's like that soothing, almost like paternal talk. Like, hey, listen. It's all right. Don't worry. Stop worrying. And it's not about Dougal necessarily. It's about her being where she is. Stop worrying.
Well, then she makes him feel bad because she says, I am going to worry. I'm not supposed to be here. I need to leave. Even you said it. I'm a Sasanak. Like, I shouldn't be here. And he was like, oh, I didn't mean it to be that way.
Yeah, and I appreciated this too because he's used to interacting with her in one way, which is that flirtatious, kind of funny, ironic way. Because she does the same thing with him. Oh, don't get burned or flogged or anything. You know, just don't get burned or flogged or anything. You know, that's what's happening most of the time. And he's engaging her with this in that manner. And she's having none of it because she wants to get the hell out of there. But again, he comes back with that. It's fine, Sasanak. It's really okay. We're going to be all right. And this is the first time I finally felt that. Je ne sais quoi, that all the people like our team, Jamie, understand. And this is for you, Mandy Taylor. This is for you. I no longer totally hate Jamie. I really don't.
I'm glad. And he tells Claire, listen, girl, there's no point in escaping right now. Even though, yeah, everyone's partying. There's actually a bajillion guys in the woods. You wouldn't have made it that far. You don't know where you're going. Poor plan, Claire.
Yeah. And this is when, she's too smart for herself.
Yeah, and he's so charming at this point. He's almost like laughing at her, like, you're really sweet for trying to get out of here.
But you're dumb as heck.
Yeah, and you know what? I don't want to get you in trouble, so I'm going to sneak you in through the cellar, and I'm just going to put you back, and no one's going to know that you escaped, all right? Deal. Mm-hmm. And he's trying to sneak her back in, and in the process, those guys who are hiding in the woods that he was telling her all about
get
her. And they get him. And this is where Jamie gets into a problem. Because I bet you there were like three people who knew Jamie was hiding. You know, Alec, Callum, Dougal. They were all like, listen, if we don't see you, we won't go looking for you.
Yeah.
All right?
The less we know, the better.
Yes. And instead, these guys who are man in the woods, they catch him and they're like, Jamie!
Hey!
Where have you been?
It's the oath, bro.
And he's like, oh. Shoot, and they knock him over the head.
they give him a pound in. And,
yeah.
And now he's forced to do the oath. And now we get into this whole scene that we already talked about, which is either he does the oath and Dougal kills him because he's going to be the Laird, or he doesn't do the oath and Dougal kills him because he's not doing the oath. So what does he do? He says, I am going to pledge an oath, but I'm not going to pledge the oath, but I'm going to promise to obey you, Callum.
When I'm here,
as long as I remain on the lands of Clan Mackenzie.
That's kind of like the deal I made with my parents when I went to college. You know, you become an adult. And whenever I'd come home over the summers, I was like, all right, I'll follow your rules when I'm here. You know, I'll come home at a reasonable hour. I don't want you staying up late for me. You're asking me to come home at a reasonable hour, not to do anything. But hey, when I'm at college, you don't get to tell me what to do.
Yeah, exactly. And
that's pretty much what Jamie said.
I wonder if he potties as much as you potty in college.
I didn't party that much in college. I was an RA. I'm like trying to think like, no, I lived in the honors dorm.
Oh my God. You're such a geek.
Our partying was playing Age of Empires.
Hey guys, you want to play Dungeons and Dragons?
I remember it was like a wild night. I went out and got a lot of Dunkaroos. And we played Age of Empires.
What?
That's how I made friends. I bribed them with Dunkaroos.
You really ate Dunkaroos?
That stuff is... You love frosting. Frosting with like...
Cookies?
Much, yeah. listen, if you need to make friends and you're 18, Dunkaroos, man.
No,
way to go.
I gave my buddies Bud Light. I gave him a bag of weed. I didn't bring Dunkaroos.
Oh my goodness, you are a very different man than me. I'm surprised.
Well,
I didn't know
that you were a man.
Oh, anyway, I am not like you in many ways. Thank goodness we met each other later
Jesus
on in
H.
life.
Jesus H. Roosevelt Christ.
Right? Goodness. I did like that Jamie didn't want to wear that pin, though.
I thought that was great because it's not his family's pin.
Mm-hmm.
You know? What did the pin say, by the way?
Oh, gosh. Hold on. I wrote it down because I was like, oh, I need to remember this.
Well, tell me in a little bit, but the pin was, again, it was back to that title card, and you didn't know what it was until you saw it, and there it was. Oh, my God, it's the pin.
Oh, it was Lucio non oro,
oh,
meaning I shine, not burn.
Wow. What is he? Khaleesi in Game of Thrones?
Ooh.
Yeah, you like that there, huh?
Yeah.
I got you. A dragon doesn't die by fire.
Whereas Jamie's motto was, I am ready.
Yes.
So he walks on in and Claire sees Murtaugh. Murtaugh's like, oh, God, girl, what did you do now? Now Jamie's here and everyone gets quiet. It
yes.
is like super awkward again.
Because, and that's showing that everybody knows the problem that Jamie is facing. And thank God we have Murtaugh there. And I liked how they finally had the audience kind of meet halfway with this episode, partly. In the beginning of the episode, you don't know why Jamie is missing. You don't know why all this stuff is happening. And I'm glad that Jamie wasn't there, yes, because of the story, but also because it gave reality to the show, to the episode, that Jamie really is missing. He's gone. We don't know where he is. And if why should we know where Jamie is if Claire doesn't know where Jamie is? Mm-hmm. It gives reality to the fact that Jamie is missing. He's gone off somewhere else that we don't know, and he's really trying to hide out. And it isn't until Claire is in trouble that he actually comes to her rescue and gets himself into trouble here. And thank God you have Murtaugh there eventually describing to you what's happening. He is giving the requisite like Gaelic translation because you wouldn't like. I remember looking at it being like, wow, am I stupid? Am I not getting this?
Why is this a big deal?
Why is there such tension? Is it just because Jamie is a marked man? Like, am I not getting it? And then you get the explanation.
I loved when Dougal comes in, so the whole hall goes quiet. Jamie's walking in. Murtaugh's explaining everything. Dougal walks in and he rubs his head. Still like looking like, man. Why does my head hurt?
God, that sucked.
And you see him be like, oh, no, Jamie's here. And it's this really weird look.
Yeah, and even as Jamie is walking up, you have Dougal walking up at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to me like a little foreshadowing. As they're both approaching Colm, they're both approaching the Laird position. They're both arriving at the same time. And Dougal has his head hurt, and he's like kind of woozy. He's messed up. Is it alluding to the fact that Jaime is going to eventually become Laird of Castle Leok?
No, Dougal was giving Jaime the stare down, like the stink eye stare down.
Oh my God, if Mrs. Fitz invented stink eye with Claire, Dougal perfected the stink eye with Jaime.
Mm-hmm. And poor Colm. Colm's looking at Jaime, and I think Colm was like, in his mind, he was like, Jaime, why are you here?
I know.
Jamie,
what are you doing?
I gave you the note to just hang out in the stable.
Didn't you get the memo?
Gosh, man. What are you doing? And Jamie kneels at first, and you see him look around, and he's like, he takes a gulp, and he's like, all right, stands right back up. I'm going to do this.
And I wonder if Jamie had this planned the whole time. I wonder if, is this something that he thought of in case he was brought in front of Colm and Dougal? Or is he just like super smart and made this up as he went?
I think he's super smart. You know when you have a fight with someone,
yeah,
and afterwards you're like, oh, you know what would have been really cool if I said X, Y, or Z? That would have really shown them.
Yeah.
I bet you and Jamie was hiding in the stable saying a little woe is me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh man, I have to hide in the stable. What would I have done? What would I have said? I don't think Jamie was planning on doing this at all. I think he really had planned on hiding as long as he possibly could.
Mm-hmm.
He's just a very smart man.
Yeah. Do you think he kind of wanted to do it, though?
No.
You don't think so?
No.
You didn't think you got that little bit of satisfaction of saying, I'm not one of you, but I'm going to be here, and I don't need your crap. I'm just going to live my life.
I bet it felt good when he walked away and he wasn't dead.
Yeah, well, anytime you don't wake up dead, that's a good thing.
But Jamie already has a price on his head.
Yep.
His uncle, just a couple of days ago, let some guy beat him to pulp.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows that he's just not welcome really anywhere. You know, Jamie's a bit of a lost soul.
And this is another thing, too. Everybody knows that Jamie is going to be the next possible Laird. And I wonder if that beating scene was also Dougal being like, know your place, boy. I don't want to hear from you coming up in the gathering soon.
Of course, that was it. That was totally it.
I don't want to hear from you. I don't want to see you. Know your place. I'm above you. I'm the next Laird. You are not. And I can have you killed if I need to.
Yep. That is definitely it. Colm seemed to like Jamie during this speech.
Yeah, I like how they shot that too, because it showed Colm and he reached down for something. You weren't sure what it was. you could infer that it was the saucer of wine or water or whatever it was.
Oh, wine.
And then you just see...
No Awkwafina.
This big freaking honking smile on Colm's face.
And the rest of the hall.
Yeah.
It was like Jamie had just saved the world from a plague. Everyone's hooping and hollering.
Everyone just let out this one giant like fart. That's what it felt like. It was like all of a sudden...
Here I am saying hooping and hollering and you're saying fart.
Yeah. Ew. Well, it was like all of a sudden you had that relief of like...
No, they're dancing. They're celebrating. I think it's completely different. But if that's what makes you feel good.
Well, no, ultimately, I also think there's a little bit more happening here. A little bit more. And I'll get into this, my outlandish theory of the week. But you have that initial happiness. And it was great for Jamie.
Yeah.
It was great.
He's leaving. Everyone's dancing. Everyone's happy. Jamie comes on over to Claire and Murtaugh, and he and Murtaugh are probably going to go and like high five and be like, oh my God, I'm still alive. That was close. But what I liked in this little scene is as Jamie's walking away with Murtaugh, Claire looks at him with a nice little smile.
Mm-hmm.
And then she kind of looks away and you see him looking back at her.
Yeah.
And it's that quintessential thing that happens always in movies.
Oh, yeah.
When, like, you're trying to look at the boy you like, but he's not looking at you, so then you're all coy, and then he does look at you after all, mm-hmm. and you didn't know it. And I thought it was just such a cute little moment. I loved that they did that. So, Claire, sorry, honey. You are not leaving in the night of the gathering, and you need to get ready because you need to go and help all these guys on the day of
the hunt.
The big hunt, man. Gosh.
And the boar hunt. And I like how she's like, oh, yeah, it takes all of you to just kill this little boar. And it shows how ignorant she is to the time. Because boars, didn't she ever watch Lost?
No, it was 1943.
Boars are bad news things.
I don't even know if they had boar's head ham. I mean, probably in the 1940s, like, that's how she would see ham. Like, oh, look at this nice little carved ham that I get to have at Christmas.
And not only is there just one freaking boar, there's like 20 boar. Oh,
I was not expecting that.
Neither was I.
I loved these scenes. Always all fog because it was, you know, early in the morning and the guys are banging their shield, which is one of the scenes from the opening. I did not know that that's what that was from.
I know.
I thought it was going to be them marching off into war. And I just loved this because they're banging and it sounded so loud. And that's, of course, what's riling up all the boar. But it almost sounded like gunshots echoing.
Yeah.
And I really think that Claire went into World War Claire the nurse.
Yes.
You know, hearing these gunshots, hearing these guys cry, and she just went into action. She saved that guy right away who had a bloody leg. And then you hear another guy do a much worse scream. Still mm-hmm. with these bangs. And it really did. I thought, you know, part of Claire's psyche just switched over and it was back to being in the war zone.
But the problem was that she wasn't really paying attention. And then all of a sudden she gets in this little bit of a heated tangle with a boar that was around her.
I think she was trying to pay attention, but she's never had to hide from a boar before. Seriously, so
you don't know. There's not like a list of things to do when a boar's running after you.
Gosh, she was so stupid. There was a fallen tree.
I was just going to say that.
Yes, like okay, whoever directed it, why did you shoot that tree? Because all of us at home were saying, Claire, jump on that tree. Get on the tree, Claire. Just. Jump, stop standing and walking around in a circle and looking nervous. Just get on the darn tree.
But I like how they shot it because it was panning in a circular motion around Claire. It was jarring. It was quick cuts. All you heard was this guy screaming and you heard the boar and you were stuck right in the middle of it with Claire. You didn't know what was happening, just like how she didn't know what was happening. And maybe it was just a little bit of adrenaline pumping through her veins that prevented her from seeing that tree.
Well, it was back in the moment, man. She just fixed up this guy's leg, told him, hey, you're going to have a limp for a while. That was a gross leg cut. Yikes.
Yikes. Blah, blah, blah.
But really, I mean, this is what happens to people when a bad situation happens and they're scared. You can't move. And she was just dumb, didn't know to climb up a tree. And thank God Dougal was there. I mean, we went from hating on Dougal last night to being mm-hmm. the drunk, inappropriate man. And
here he is saving her again, by the way.
Yes. Another. Saves her because a boar is chasing after her.
And literally inches away from her.
Yep. Shoots it at her feet, even though a foot away from her was a tree. Stupid Claire. You could have just jumped on the darn tree.
But then we get to go see what's happening. And apparently it's this guy, Jordy, who got the business from one of the boar.
Oh.
And you look at it like, oh, well, okay, he got his leg cut like the other guy. And she says, oh, well, and this was great voiceover work here, by the way, when she says that the blood wasn't spurting, so the femoral artery was not cut. And as a viewer, I could probably infer that, but I definitely would not have known it.
No.
Not the way that she does. So you sit there and you're like, oh, okay, well, great. Here's this guy, Jordy. He's going to live. He's got a leg cut until
she looks at his guts. It was like watching The Walking Dead for a second there. Total guts coming out.
I thought about what was Saving Private Ryan. Oh. You know, on the beach when the guy's got, he's putting back his intestines into his stomach. What great makeup work, by the way. Great special effects work.
Oh, seriously.
Because all the blood coming out of the leg and everything, phenomenal stuff.
Ugh.
And then you see the innards, and I was like, oh.
And Claire does that little shake because she knows. She knows he's done. And Dougal then undoes the little knot that she's done
so,
to save him.
So subtle and so awesome. And it, you know, you could contest that you didn't need that particular voiceover afterwards. She's like, oh, he's going to give him a safer place to be. Because you can infer that by the way that he undoes the leg. And you see the blood come flowing back out
again.
The
blood was like black at that moment.
Yeah, and that's when you know you got a serious problem when your blood's black.
Ugh.
Right? I loved how they had that little subtle movement. And you finally get to see Dougal as a man who really cares. You didn't even know this guy, Jordy, right?
No.
You don't even know him. But his death matters to you. It matters to you because it is putting Dougal in a situation where he's getting emotional. And not only does the death matter, but they're lingering on this death. They're sitting there making this death impactful for you. They're spending time on it.
They spent a lot of time
on it. It was like a good 5-6 minutes worth of time on this death. And how heartbreaking was it to hear him say, all I want to do is just be back home. I want to be back to where I am in a safe place. And Claire makes that happen for him. She says, tell me about your home. And he starts describing it. And you see Dougal getting the resignation that this guy's going to croak. And he's just trying to give him a safe place to be, somewhere that he can be as he passes. And it was heartbreaking. And it got me a little emotional because this guy, all you could do was just imagine how awful you must feel as he's bleeding out. And he's saying he can't feel his leg. And
he can't feel his hand.
He can't feel his hand. And you see the whiteness of his skin just go paler and paler. And then as his eyes close, you realize that this guy's, he ain't going to make it.
I don't know why Dougal had to tell him he slept with his sister.
Then she's a bonny lass.
Like, you could have kept that to yourself.
Come on, man.
Ah, oh, Dougal. But he seemed to take it well.
He was pretty happy about it. He's like, hey, if someone's going to sleep with my sister, might as well be you. You know, yeah. You're a pretty cool dude, even though you tried to rape Claire 20 minutes ago.
Yeah, mixed feelings. Mixed feelings for sure. Goodness. Speaking about mixed feelings, I mean, the guys come back from the hunt. You see them bringing the boar, and then you see, of course, what you know to be a dead body left over.
And you
see
all the people in the castle looking at it like, oh, man. Something.
And then the other half of the people, now it's hockey time.
Yes. And
field hockey.
And this is great, too, because now it shows that, yeah, there are things that happen. Hunting boar in 1743, it's kind of a dangerous sport. So what do? We got to let go. We got to move on. People die. Things happen. I get it. So let's move on with our lives. And there's our boy, Jamie. Kicking some butt in field hockey.
Oh, my God. What? This is not field hockey. This was so scary.
It reminded me of rugby. It was like rugby / field hockey.
No, it was more like regular hockey because we do not check people like that in field hockey.
I don't know. I've never played
hockey.
It.
Well, I mean, it's nothing like that. Don't you see this more being like the Bruins?
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, this was some bad news. Field hockey / hockey. Esque, whatever. It was like big bad Bruins. For those of you who are not from Boston, the 1970 through 72 Bruins were named the big bad Bruins because all they did was just kick butt the entire time. All they did was pound on people. That's what this reminded me of the entire time.
Dougal and Jamie had a cute little interaction. Dougal said, I taught you this game. And Jamie says, you taught me well.
Yeah, after he just like pummels him over his back. By the way, I loved the face that Dougal was making as he was getting ready to get into the game. It was like anger. It was it was like feeling grief over his buddies dying. And you could tell that like that anger was going to be taken out. And he sees Jamie. And Jamie showed him up. He totally showed him up at the gathering. Because he prevented Dougal from doing what he should have done. Or at least in his mind, what he should have done, which was kill Jamie. Mm-hmm. He got shown up again. And there he is. Now this is his chance to just give him the business. And there Jamie just gets a hold of him again.
Dougal plays poorly.
He's sitting there and he's like he's ripping all the freaking clothes off. And he's getting up there.
He knocks one guy over. Then he knocks over another guy who's just trying to make some soup or something. He like hits him. And this is when there were some interesting like slow-mo shots.
Yeah.
Some very different directing.
Yeah. It was almost like, I think Brian Kelly was the director of this episode. And it was almost like he didn't know what to do with this scene. He wasn't sure how to handle it. He wanted to show you the impact of the hits and how cool it was.
It made me think though of old school like Batman, and I felt like it should be like pow, wham, zip, you know, because it was a little jolting.
Holy awkward directing, Batman, you know, like that's what it reminded me. It didn't fit this episode. Brian Kelly is good at character directing from what I can see. He lets the characters speak for themselves. John Dahl, who directed the first two episodes we already talked about in the last podcast, made it a very cinematic show. He had a very specific intent on making this world seem big and fantastic and beautiful, whereas Brian Kelly took the episodes and brought it down a notch and let the characters stand for themselves. It let the set pieces stand for themselves. It wasn't about making it fancy. And then all of a sudden you have this scene where you have the slow-mo and it's kind of like, what are we doing here? And it felt funny. It felt off to me. But I eventually ended up liking how Rupert got it, dude, right in the twig and berries. Aww. From somebody with one of those sticks. And it wasn't Dougal, which is surprising. But the little battle between Dougal and Jamie was really cool.
Jamie the Nas Dibubin. we don't know.
It wasn't even important to Jamie anymore.
No.
It was the fact that he just gave Dougal the business.
Dougal has a interesting conversation with Claire afterwards where he says, "You've seen men die before."
Yes. And it's a little subtle hint that I know who you are, Sassanach.
But not really, but I'm going to fake it.
But he knows that something's up with her.
Yeah.
Before it was kind of like, oh, you're a spy. I don't know you. You have medical knowledge, whatever. But now since he's seen that interaction, and this was brilliant writing on the writer's part, because it's a subtle threat, again, on Dougal's behalf. You've seen men die before. You've been in it. I don't know what it is, but you are something far more than what you've been telling all
but
of
then
us.
Then he thanks her. He says, thank you. You know, you took my friend to a peaceful place.
Yes.
And Claire gives a little sass about how she's stuck in this dark room. And he's like, oh, well, guess what? I'm here to set you free from this dark room. And for a moment, you're like, Claire, you finally did it. You earned his trust.
Mm-hmm.
You did what you were supposed to do. And in fact, Dougal's like, I'm going to go out on the road and we're going to go collect some taxes, and it's going to get pretty nasty out there. And guess what? You're coming.
Because I need you.
Which, A, because I need you, and B, he still doesn't trust her at all. Mm-hmm. And he wants to keep her right under his thumb.
Yeah, I'm you're going to be right there, right next to me, and that's how it's going to be. I almost, in my heart of hearts, expected him to acknowledge what happened between the two in the hallway there.
Mm.
I almost expected him to be like, you know, I'm sorry that this happened, or I don't want to catch you in the hallways again, or something, some kind of acknowledgement. But maybe he was too drunk to admit to what happened. Maybe he didn't remember it. I don't know. But yes, you're right. He's keeping Claire underneath his thumb. He does not trust her.
Gosh, she looks so hopeless, and they're all riding off in the beginning of the morning on their horses. But luckily, Jamie's there, and Claire got hooked up with Mrs. Fitz with some nice new coat and
some
gloves.
Where are they getting all this clothing? This fabulous freaking clothing for Claire.
McZappos. telling you, next day delivery.
Didn't someone on Twitter say McZappos was the finest provider of clothing.
Oh, yeah. We'll put it up on Facebook. Someone made a great picture.
The finest purveyor of clothing since 1743 in Scotland.
Yes.
I'm sorry. Whoever said that, that was genius.
I think it was our friend Gannon Carr.
Oh, yeah. It might have been Gannon Carr. Gannon, if that was you, that was freaking awesome. Thank you so much for doing that. But, yeah. What a great coat with the white fur and everything. Is this like Letitia's clothing, do you think? You think she, like, Mrs. Fitz is stealing it from Letitia?
Ooh, I don't know.
You think Letitia sees that? It's like, hey, that's my coat, girl.
Riding off into the dawn. Who knows?
I know.
Gosh. But then we have that long voiceover of Claire once again saying, you know, I'm determined to reach the stones and I must not fail. We know, Claire. We know that you really want to get to the stones. That's the episode.
What'd you end up thinking of the episode overall?
I loved this episode. And I know I say this probably very frequently, but I really enjoyed this episode. I thought it was so great how we were in Claire's mind and she was focused. I'm going to escape. I'm going to escape. And then you realize, Claire, your problems are small in comparison to what's really going on right now. Mm-hmm. People are dying easily. Jamie is in some deep crap that you didn't even know existed.
And you caused, by the way. Mm-hmm. You know, I love how Murtaugh was like, yeah, actually, it's your fault. It's your fault that Jamie is in this position now. It was great. It was real, right?
Yeah.
I think I liked this episode a lot, too. I definitely liked it a lot better than last week's episode. Mm-hmm. Whereas last week's episode felt like it was a monster of the week. You know, it did introduce Father Bane. It was nice. You get that introduction to a character who's probably going to be Claire's nemesis going forward. But this episode actually took the story and moved it forward in a lot of different ways.
Yeah.
You see the complexities that happen with Jamie. You see the complexities with Dougal, by the way. You see what's happening with the Castle Leok. And then it finally gets Claire out of Castle Leok. It gives her a narrative that is going to make sense. It puts her in specific danger now. She's out of the castle now. What's she going to do? What's going to happen? Who are they going to run into?
I don't know, but she has a fabulous outfit.
Maybe they'll just avoid her just because of the outfit.
She's just fine.
So, and this episode, while not as good in my opinion as the first two, succeeded in a lot of the ways where the third episode did not. And made for much better television.
Oh my gosh, I just love every episode. I can't even handle. I just love every single episode. Oh gosh, you know who else loves episodes?
Who?
Our listeners.
Yeah, let's get the listener feedback.
Khaleesi, whose Twitter handle is not just a Mundle, or Mundy, not just a Mundy.
Ooh.
I don't even know what that means. She said, Wizard of Oz reference. Yes, which was awesome because we talked about the red shoes last week. Khaleesi was talking about the there's no place like love comment.
Yes.
So we kind of had almost, you know, last week was red shoes.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have a straight up Wizard of Oz reference. Love it.
That's good stuff. We have Mike D tweeting and saying, in modern sports, Dougal would have gotten a red card immediately. Yeah, that would have been a red card, totally. Sorry. Oh, my God. Woof. Gave some people a dirty beating, man. Pushing that guy into, like, the fire and everything.
I would not play that game.
Holy crap.
Dina Hervey says, I keep waiting to hear bippity-boppity-boo as Mrs. Fitz conjures up another wardrobe piece. Honestly, I need to be Mrs. Fitz's friend. Man. That would have been great.
Where's the pumpkin? You have like the horses and...
Yeah.
Wow.
The tweet of the week comes from Kay Clark Photography. She says that the voiceovers are now getting a hashtag. She's now calling them clarification.
I see what you did there.
Nice job, Kay Clark Photography. And thanks for being this tweet of the week. We received some voicemails this week. Blake, why don't you line them up?
Hi, my name is Julie, and I'm calling from Los Angeles, California. I just wanted to say that so much focus lately has been, on the chemistry between Sam and Katrina as Jamie and Claire, and rightfully so. But there are so many other kinds of chemistry other than romantic chemistry, and As I was watching this latest episode, I was particularly struck as I was watching all the different scenes between Jamie and Dougal and Claire and Angus and Rupert and Myrta and Claire. This whole cast has such brilliant and beautiful chemistry together, and not a one of them has hit a sour note. And I just have to applaud Ron Moore and the casting department on this cast that they have put together. And I am so excited where they're going to go. I mean, if it's like this 4 episodes in, it's just going to only get better. Just amazing.
Julie, thank you for that wonderful insight about the entire cast. You're right. It's not just about Jamie and Claire. It's about the rest of the ensemble. Everybody is hitting the right note. Everybody is doing the job the way that they're supposed to be doing. It's a natural flow. You really believe that these people are truly 1743 Scots. You really believe that Claire is a woman that is completely displaced from her own time, specifically because of the talent that they all have. And it is all due to Ron Moore and, right, as you said, the casting director. Unbelievable job by these guys.
So we also had some other great feedback about our show. This one comes from Beth Silberman Phillips. She says, new favorite phrase, hashtag Sassenach wasted Outlander cast. Episode 4 is making me laugh out loud during my layover in the Philly airport. Great analysis, Mary and Blake. Hashtag no Awkwafina in 1743. See, I told you, there's a hashtag Sassenach wasted. Great job, sweetheart.
We also received another review on iTunes. This time it was from Cassie Hex. She says, it's by fans for fans. I am loving this podcast, Cassie writes.
Thank you.
I enjoy listening because it's like discussing the show with my friends. Mary and Blake are exactly like my boyfriend and me. I'm the book reader, and he's totally new to it. I so admire Mary's ability to not give anything away because it's so hard. I'll definitely keep listening. This is actually one of the top things that I get asked is, how do I manage to not give everything away to you, Blake? Guys, you need to know, when we record, half of the time I have to look down at the table, or like I don't even make eye contact with Blake.
I try not to even look at her if I'm saying something, because she does not have the greatest poker face I've ever seen. She's like definitely not Lady Gaga. Pop, 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 poker face. Like, no, she just doesn't have it. You know?
I don't. So sorry, but I do. I hold it in together.
She does a good job though. She definitely does.
Thank you.
She literally has not said a freaking word about anything, about any outlandish theory that I've made, about anything. She's been pretty good. I got to give her credit.
All right, everyone. There were amazing reviews this week. So Blake and I have a super special extra episode that is going to come out later this week, detailing a lot of your tweets. We had awesome Instagram feedback and Facebook. So it's going to be a whole episode.
And we had a lot more voicemails too. So I also want to say this. If you have listened to this episode and you did not get a chance to get a voicemail in, you still have an opportunity to make this just special listener feedback episode. I think we'll do some a little bit more analysis and a little bit more getting together and getting deeper into this episode just between Mary and I a little bit. But most of it's going to be all the listener feedback that you guys provided, all your theories, everything. So get it. If you still want to get a chance to get in, you still have the opportunity.
Send it in to us, friends. We already have a ton, and we could easily put in some more. Blake, it is now time for the Outlandish Theory of the Week. What do you think this week? Now, for everyone, if this is your first time listening to this podcast, I have read the books, so I don't do an Outlandish Theory of the Week. Blake is brand new to the show. We keep this show spoiler-free, which is difficult for me, but Blake gets to have an Outlandish Theory. So what is it?
Okay, I got two this week. Now, the first one I've already teased. I teased it last episode. I teased it at the beginning of this episode. Here it is. This is one of the big ones.
Okay.
Galus is not who she seems. She's too interested in Claire. She's got too many things going on, asking way too many questions. She seems to know more about Claire than Claire really wants her to know about. And Claire really makes her really nervous, really. I mean, you saw that last episode, right? When Claire was talking with Galus at her house, and when Jamie shows up, she gives Jamie a look like, hey, get me out of this. I got to get out because this girl is freaking me out. And then Jamie kind of rescues her, right? This is my theory. In that episode, they talk about the song, about the Stones, and how other people have gone through, yada, yada, yada. Galus is also a traveler.
Oh.
Galus is so interested in Claire because she knows exactly what Claire's going through because okay. she already did it. And you notice, she said in this episode, and this is why I wanted to let this marinate a little bit here. I wanted it to marinate. Because she says to Galus, well, when I showed up here, I did X, Y, and Z.
Galus says this to Claire?
Yeah. Sorry. Okay. Galus says this to Claire. When I showed up in this place, I did X, Y, and Z, and now I have a comfortable life. Maybe you should do that too. And she's so interested in knowing about Claire. Why? Because she wants to know for sure that she, like that Claire, like she, has traveled through time. I guarantee that's what's happening with. That's why Galus knows all this stuff. That's why she knows all these things about the plants. People are calling her a witch because nobody's really sure about her. She is a traveler as well.
Okay.
That's why I had to let that one marinate a little bit because I just, you know, I wanted to get that feeling going through. But
interesting.
The big one that I got one for this particular episode right away. After you see Jamie do the oath, right? You see Colm give Dougal this look. And after everyone was smiling and after Colm was smiling and Jamie walks away, they pan to Colm looking at Dougal very quickly. And it reminded me of the look that Michael gave Al Neri in The Godfather Part 2.
When
Michael Corleone looks at Al Neri after he hugs his brother Fredo and he looks at him like, Al, this is it. You got to kill my brother. You got to kill Fredo. Ah. And Al says, and you can just see the look of shame on Al's face, like, oh, you're right. I got to do it. And this is what's going to happen.
Oh, I don't remember that. Can you put it to me in non-Godfather terms?
Yeah, let me finish.
Okay.
Colm gave Dougal a look like, this guy showed us up. He's putting us in a position now. He's not claiming fealty, but he's also not taking part in what he's supposed to be taking part in. This guy's got to die.
Oh.
So what happens? He looks at Dougal. Dougal looks over and says, yep, not going to do this. And as Dougal's leaving, who happens to be with them?
Oh, Jamie.
Jamie. So I also think that Dougal is going to make it so that Jamie, it reminds me of...
has a little accident.
Yeah, it reminds me of Shawshank Redemption when the captain's taking Andy Dufresne. He's about to throw him off the roof. He says, this man's about to have himself an accident. And that's what's going to happen with Dougal and Jamie. And this is what's going to happen. Dougal's going to end up dying somehow, some way, because it's like foreshadowing when he does that claim to Colm. He's like, oh, I'll die if I don't follow through with this or whatever. And this is what's going to push Claire into Jamie's arms. And they're going to be out of the castle, and Jamie is going to have to like fend for Claire. And somehow, some way, Claire's going to have to take care of Jamie because he's hurt, whatever. This is what's going to push the story along.
Okay.
So
that's some serious outlandish theories,
my
friend.
That's a very serious outlandish theory. I saw that look, and I immediately thought of The Godfather Part 2.
Well, I'm glad that you did, and I have no idea what you're talking about.
Well, for all of you who have seen The Godfather, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so incredibly much for taking the time to listen to Blake and I recap this show.
Especially my outlandish theories. Wow, yes. That was a good one today, right?
They were great. As I said, we're going to have a very special episode that really focuses on all the listener feedback. This show is just so well-rounded because of you. Blake and I sit here, but it's like we're talking with hundreds of people.
I can't tell you how many people have decided to talk to us about this. I can't believe how popular this show has become.
I'm happy.
I'm not patting myself on the back. I'm literally like surprised. I'm genuinely surprised.
People love Outlander. Whether you're a book reader or if you're now new to the show, it's exciting and you want to talk about it.
Yeah.
And we get it. We don't know a lot of people around here that watch it. So we're happy that there are people who have found us over the internet and we want to talk with you even more. So here are the big ways that you can reach out to us. Head on over to our website. OutlanderCast.com. If you don't get to listen on iTunes, you can listen on OutlanderCast.com. But it's also a great spot for you to leave us that voicemail feedback. You can call the number, or you can even do it right through the website. So it's OutlanderCast.com.
You hit that orange button that says send a voicemail through the computer, or like Mary just said, call the hotline, 503-454-6730, right on your telephone. You can get us on Facebook at facebook.com/OutlanderCast.
The conversation about Outlander is always happening on Twitter. So
it
you
never
can
stops.
Find us there. Never. Only when I'm sleeping.
Yeah.
Or when our kid is teething. And our handle is OutlanderCast.
You can also get us on the email machine at outlandercast@gmail.com.
And don't forget to spread the love on iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
Head on over, take a moment, rate and review us, because that is how more people find out about us. Now, if we want the Outlander fandom to grow, we need to show people that this is huge. So we want to get in that new and noteworthy section again,
mm-hmm.
so that people are like, what is Outlander? What is this? And more people learn about it and join this conversation. Who knows? We could get stars to renew for season 3.
That could happen.
You know? Well, let's bring it. Let's
just
do
thanks
it, guys.
To us.
Let's do it. Let's bring Outlander to the forefront. So head on over to iTunes and rate and review.
And my darling, if our lovely fans cannot get enough of Outlander, what should they do?
They could listen to the other podcast that we love.
Yes, that's right. Please go listen to Alistair and Lonnie over at the Scott and the Sassenach. They are wonderful people. As a matter of fact, we have a little bit of a clip here that Alistair provided for us based upon my challenge of the accent challenge. Mary, play it for us.
Hi, Mary. Hi, Blake. This is Alistair from the Scott and the Sassenach podcast. After your last few episodes, honor clearly compels me to rise to your accent challenge. Although I will say, we all know there isn't an accent in the world that can compete with Blake's clear voice. We know that, right? That is something very, very special. But with that in mind, I guess I have to take my best effort at authentic Bostonian. So, here goes. There's nothing better in the middle of your week than an Outlander podcast. That's why I listen to the Outlander cast. The wicked smad. Oh, that was terrible. That was really terrible, you guys. However, in return, Blake, I think you should take a run at that wee verse that we use to close off our podcast, written by the favored son of Scotland, Robert Burns. Here's to us, fa's like us, damn few, and that odd deed. Keep up the fantastic work, you guys. Your show is one of the highlights of my week, and it's a thrill for us to be a part of this fantastic Outlander podcast community. Keep up the good work, and slán shabha!
Yeah, that was good. Alistair, yeah, I'm just going to leave that one alone. I will tell you, however, I will send my response to you, and you can play it on your own show. And I will play it on my response to you on next week's show, on this show. If you can't get enough of just that, who else should they listen to?
You should listen to the Outlander podcast with hosts Ginger and Summer. They are two fantastic Outlander fans, and they've had an awesome podcast for quite some time. So you really get to have multi-dimensions of listening to Outlander, because let's be honest, having it once a week just isn't enough, right? So,
well, the good thing is we all provide different views. Alistair and Lonnie, they provide really good insights into story and storytelling and the mechanics of it all. And Summer and Ginger, they're just like super fans, and they love everything Outlander. So go listen to them. When we miss stuff, they get it. If they miss stuff, we get it. It's all one big community. Rate and review them too, please. Do everything you can to support this community. We all need it.
All right, everyone. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to Outlander Cast. It has been such a joy, and I can't wait for next week. I'm super pumped. My name is Mary.
My name is Blake.
And this has been Outlander Cast.